On this episode of the Fanboy Garage, we start off by talking about the Fox Disney sale, and then we talk about one of the franchises that it will have a great effect on, the X-Men franchise. We not only look at the present and the future, but we go all the way back to the beginning and take you through the entire X-Men cinematic universe. There's a lot to unpack, so let's open the garage and start unpacking episode 12. And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, the Continuity King, the man who kicks five-year-olds, and the master of the metaphor, Aaron Varola.
Yo! What's up, people? I wear that crown proudly.
Which one?
Continuity King.
Oh, okay.
And this is... Oh, yeah, the five-year-old kicking crown, too. I definitely wear that. And I think, given today's topic, you know, this is kind of where it all started for me. You know, we'll be talking about the X-Men and all of the goodness that comes with that franchise. But there's lots of things for us to unpack in this episode. So before we go any further, let's kick things off with some exciting stuff, huh?
Sure. We have an announcement here, and that is we are going to be doing our very first listener contest here on the Fanboy Garage. And it's going to be pretty simple. First thing is, what do you win? What you will be winning is our digital copies of Marvel Studios' Black Panther and Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Both great movies.
Yes.
Both.
And
yes.
All you have to do to win or to enter is go to thefanboygarage.com and scroll down to where it says Contact the Show. And then that's a form that will send an email to the show and just put in the subject line, Fanboy Garage Contest 1, and that will be an entry for you. Now, if you put in the body of the email the username that you've left a 5-star review on iTunes with, or some confirmation of a proof of purchase at the Fanboy Garage merchandise store, that will give you additional entries. And we're going to pick a name at random and announce it on the next episode of the Fanboy Garage, and one winner will receive both digital copies of Black Panther and Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Ooh, what a sweet package.
Yep.
Yeah, folks, so, and we're not, the reason why we're doing this, you know, through our website is when we realize that some folks may not be solely operating on Twitter. So of course we want to give everybody the sort of most balanced opportunity to kind of get their hands on this awesome giveaway. So please, you know, click that link and either leave a review or buy some stuff, guys. I just tweeted out a picture of me rocking my TFG Superman type shirt. So. Sweet. And I have to say, not to pat ourselves on the back, but I will for a quick moment. These t-shirts are not like the kind of shirts you get from an Instagram. Oh, that's a really cool graphic tee. I do this all the time, by the way. I buy like the craziest graphic tees from Instagram. This is like high quality material, like fabric. Stuff that we're working with T Public on our designs, and it is probably one of the cleanest looking t-shirts I've ever bought from a graphic tee perspective. So if you're really into quality stuff that doesn't make your skin itch or break out in hives or pimples, get our gear.
Yeah, it's very important that your t-shirts do not result in hives or pimples.
Yeah, seriously. So definitely get some gear, leave a 5-star review, enter to win. And you will be graciously gifted with two very awesome movies, one of which has quickly become one of my all-time favorites, which is Star Wars, obviously. So, yeah.
Now we get to talk about something that will actually give the Continuity King hives, the X-Men franchise. But before we get into the past of the X-Men franchise, we're actually going to start with the present and the future. because, you know, last week was actually going to be our X-Men episode, but with everything that went down at San Diego Comic-Con, we were like, you know what, there's no way we can't talk about that stuff. So we put the X-Men aside, and sure enough, this week we got some big news, or, you know, some rumors, or both, that affect potentially the X-Men cinematic universe. The first is that the Disney acquisition of Fox cleared yet another hurdle, as the Disney board approved the, what was it, $71 billion bid.
It's just massive, man.
Yeah. And so that means that now Disney is one step closer to acquiring Fox, which is actually going to be 20th Century Fox Studios, the regional Fox Sports networks, so not FS1 and FS2, and not the Fox, the National Fox Broadcast Channel, those, and Fox News. Those things are still going to remain under Fox ownership. But as far as 20th Century Fox Studio goes, and the regional Fox Sports networks, those are going to be owned by Disney going forward.
Whew. Man, I mean, they're paying a pretty penny for it, so, you know. And there's lots of interesting stuff that comes with that package, outside of franchises. So Chris, you're probably way more versed in this stuff than I am, because I'm looking at it solely from a fanboy perspective. So I'll let you continue to kind of dig in on this Fox bit, because I know there's a lot more to unravel that folks aren't particularly commenting about or are privy to, because they probably haven't done their research. So Chris.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of the focus has been on, you know, the obvious thing from a fanboy perspective, which is, well, Disney will now own, you know, the Fox properties, which is like the X-Men universe and Fantastic Four.
Which a lot of people are excited about.
Absolutely. It's a very big deal. I mean, we talked about how Marvel started the MCU without their A-list properties. And now it's, you know, likely that within another couple of years, they'll have access to Spider-Man, X-Men, and Fantastic Four, which are their A-list properties. Right. You wouldn't know that Fantastic Four was because of the way Fox handled that property. Oof. They basically took an A-list property and made it like a D-list property.
So bad.
But yeah, so that's a big deal. But, you know, there are other things with this. And forget about this. We're not going to get into the sports side of it. But, you know, one of the things that comes along with this, at least as of now, you know, not knowing, you know, once the FCC gets involved and if there has to be any, you know, things done to get approval by the FCC. But in theory, this would also give Disney a majority share of Hulu, you know, which is a big deal, especially when Disney is also about to kick off their own streaming service.
Yeah, so, it makes me wonder if that was part of their end game to begin with, right? Take a player off the board.
I'm sure it was, yeah.
And or build off of it, right? Because Hulu has to maintain certain licensing, right, with other studios.
Yep.
So they in turn buy pieces of that and will obviously be managing that. But then off the back of it, they can sort of create their own service, right? So
yeah,
it might be a 2-for-1 package. It might be part of the scene package. Who the hell knows what the strategy is there?
Yeah, we have no idea. But it definitely adds some intrigue to all of this. In addition to just the characters themselves that they'll have access to. But one of the things that we started to talk about before we were recording that I think you will have some interest in is
about to flip tables for it.
Some of the other ramifications as far as 20th Century Fox Studios. This is not just going to have an effect on Marvel.
No.
There will be some potential ramifications for another little franchise that Disney currently has the rights to right now.
And that being Star Wars. So a lot of people, I mean, for years and years, in fact, there's this incredible underground, I think we may have talked about this in like maybe some of our earlier episodes, but there's a really, really robust underground following for like a crew of people who have restored the original trilogy before George Lucas, that has started tinkering with versions of the first three Star Wars movies, that being New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. So that was the special edition cut Well, everything that happened before the special edition cut, right?
Yeah, the pure theatrical version. They have been piecing versions.
Together off of VHS footage, off of original cut footage, off of Laserdisc footage, and sort of slowly piecing together a high-definition version of the original trilogy untouched. One of the main issues for why Lucasfilm under the sort of Disney umbrella has been unable to release that is because those original movies were owned by 20th Century Fox. So they had the rights to those. Because if anyone remembers, it always opened up with the 20th Century Fox fanfare just before the Lucasfilm logo would sort of appear. And so they were holding on to the rights for those. So now given the sort of recent, I'd say the next step of that acquisition, fans should be super, super hopeful of getting the original trilogy untouched. I'm sure that Disney, as most studios would be interested in sort of releasing a full, series box set of like every Star Wars movie to date, including the original trilogy untouched. I, for one, would be like the first person to sign up and purchase that. That'd be amazing. So I'm super stoked at the prospect of finally getting, who knows, maybe skip the high definition 4K versions of the original trilogy untouched. Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to go through the trouble of, and we don't really want to get to, we could probably do another episode alone just on the potential of the original trilogy.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you're going to go through the trouble of having to do those rescans and everything and get it, set up for that, why wouldn't you do a 4K? Even if you have to do a 4K transfer for Blu-ray and then just do like an actual 4K version of it. I mean, why not shoot for the stars? No pun intended.
So excited for that. Ugh, yeah, man.
Just as example.
Yeah, Fantastic Four. That's good. Give me my Star Wars.
As an example of a kind of a similar situation that did wind up working out without a sale. One of the reasons why Batman 66 was never released commercially until recently was the fact that there was a fight between Warner Brothers, which owned the rights to the character, and 20th Century Fox, ironically, which owned the rights to the television show. And it wasn't until, a few years ago, those two sides realized, we're sitting on a cash cow here. And they cut a deal to start licensing not only the show, and they released the show on Blu-ray and DVD, but they started to sell figures and just all comic books and everything relating to Batman 66. And it's been a huge success for them. So it's a similar type of deal. Although now if it's all included, in the sale, they won't have to do that.
Wait a second. So, could Disney potentially own a piece of Batman?
Until I just started to speak, I don't know what.
Oh.
I don't know what was involved in that deal, to be honest with you. I mean, I'd have to go back and read through the details of it. Whether I don't know if Warner Brothers actually, bought it out, or if it was a joint venture. But yeah, I mean, who knows?
I'm going to assume they probably bought it out. Just given the. The plethora, every episode I'm going to say, the plethora of, Batman 66 related content, be it the comic books and animated movies and all of that stuff that kind of came out in the last three or so years. I would assume that they bought it outright.
I'm looking now just quickly online, and it does seem there are people who last year, I guess when this sale started to become a rumor, actually were writing articles about, could Disney own part of Batman if they do buy 20th Century Fox? I mean, who knows? It looks like it was a joint venture. It doesn't look like that Warner Brothers bought the rights to that show. So yeah, I guess in theory, yeah, Disney could own a piece of at least Batman 66.
Oof. And we'll leave that there.
Yes, we certainly will.
That is a crazy topic.
Yes, because we haven't even started talking about the actual topic of the day yet.
That relates to this. So obviously a lot of fans are super excited about the idea of, bringing the mutants home. I tweeted about that like last week. Bring my mutants home. I'm excited about that. I really am. And it's not really – it's nothing to knock Fox, and we'll get into this in a minute as we kind of break down what the sort of X-Men you know, universe has looked like since the start of Bryan Singer's film. And, you know, we'll talk about some of the cartoons and things like that. But, you know, I'm excited to see, you know, Marvel's take on the characters. I don't know when we'll get that, or when we were when we'll expect. I mean, obviously this thing hasn't even cleared like completely, so who knows if it'll even happen realistically. But you know, signs are obviously pointing to yes, and people are feeling super optimistic about it. But you know, bringing X-Men back, you know, to the Marvel universe could be an interesting dynamic. I mean, for me, you know, as we're thinking about the Avengers, you know, the Avengers is a very small facet of the Marvel universe, right? Even in the comics, right? Because they've got all of these little groups like the Defenders, sure, and the, you know, X-Men and Fantastic Four and all of that stuff.
The West Coast Avengers.
Right. So I wouldn't be surprised if Marvel Studios put the Avengers on pause and started to build their own cinematic universe around a rebooted X-Men group, right? And then sort of weave in the way that they did with Guardians of the Galaxy and the Avengers, a Fantastic Four group, while still sort of maybe plugging and playing some of the already established heroes into those films. It'd be really interesting to see what Marvel has up their sleeve in terms of how they would plan it out, but it's too soon to tell. And there's still quite a couple of hurdles that the studio needs to overcome, but I'm excited at that.
Yeah, I mean, who knows how they're going to handle it. I mean, everybody, I think, or a lot of people are assuming that, you know, they'll make X-Men movies and they'll make Fantastic Four movies, but, you know, who knows how they're going to integrate these characters. You know, they might integrate them, at least from the X-Men perspective, they might slowly start to integrate them into the existing universe, you know, without focusing on just an X-Men movie. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they'll just go all in and just stay, like you said, we'll have X-Men movies and Fantastic Four movies, and, you know, and then we'll have, like, we don't have to focus too much on the individual characters. We'll have those sprinkled in, like, you know, Black Panther and Spider-Man and whatnot. Right, and then we'll just have Avengers movies. So eventually, you get to a point where you have, like, an X-Men movie, a Fantastic Four movie, and an Avengers movie. And then sprinkle in some maybe new characters, origin stories, or solo movies throughout. I mean, it's hard to speculate right now at all on how they're going to go about doing it.
I mean,
it.
There are so many different ways they can do this, right? Yeah. I mean, they could even do it the way that they've approached their entire cinematic universe, right? With the solo movies first, that ultimately builds up to an X-Men movie.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like a Wolverine movie, you know, a Professor X movie, and then everyone's kind of finding each other.
Yeah, or will they do like what they? I mean, because you think about what they did with Spider-Man. I mean, they didn't start with a Spider-Man solo movie. They had him in Civil War.
Yeah, they just kind of dropped him in.
Yep,
literally.
Yes. So yeah. The one thing that we still don't exactly know, though, as far as two movies that are in some form exist already, right? X-Men: Dark Phoenix and New Mutants, which look to be one way or another, the final movies of the Fox X-Men era. Whether we get to see both of them or we get to see one of them, we don't know. We kind of speculated on it a little bit, I think, in the last episode. But, you know, there's rumors out there right now that we're never going to see New Mutants, that we probably will see Dark Phoenix. Then you see some stuff that says, well, maybe we won't see either movie. I mean, I'm still going to say that we're going to get Dark Phoenix. You know what? I'd probably get New Mutants too. Who knows?
Yeah. So, you know, the editor in chief of Revenge of the Fans, Mario Francisco Robles, sort of reached out to his sources deep in the sort of trenches of Fox, I'm assuming, and they pretty much confirmed that both of these movies would be coming out. Specifically, I think Dark Phoenix is sort of doing reshoots in the near term. So, yeah. So those two movies, I think, we're definitely going to – we'll be getting them. Am I excited about them? No.
Well, I think especially less so now because they're almost like lame duck movies. I mean
– right. The thing is, it has absolutely nothing to do with the Fox merger.
Right.
It has nothing to do with it. It is lack of buzz. It is, to be honest, the trailer for New Mutants, like, threw me off. I just didn't understand it. I was like, what are you doing here? It's a unique and novel approach to the whole mutant phenomenon, but it felt so different from everything that we've gotten before.
Right.
And then going back to Dark Phoenix, I mean, that has an uphill battle for me. I'm not a big fan of Apocalypse at all.
Right. Like, I don't think many people were.
It sits very close to Last Stand, in my opinion. Yeah, I wasn't really vibing with the characters and the new iterations of, you know, Cyclops and Jean Grey and all that. So here's to hoping it's good. I'm not very hopeful, though.
It's ironic, too, and we're going to get into it. We're going to start doing kind of like a timeline of the whole X-Men universe. But, you know, this will be... Yeah, this will be the second time that Fox has taken a stab at the Dark Phoenix storyline, which is one of the all-time great, right, stories. Mm-hmm. And there doesn't seem like they're going to have much success a second time drawing this.
That sucks.
It really does.
That really sucks.
I mean, and who knows? I mean, we don't want to say, but I think your feelings on this are, I think, a lot of people's feelings, where it's like, well, this is kind of a lame duck franchise now, and, you know, I don't know. We really didn't like Apocalypse, and, you know, this movie's based on a lot of the characters that were introduced in that, and, you know, I don't really know. Yeah, I don't want to invest too much in this. As far as New Mutants goes, I mean, that's even tougher, because at least with Dark Phoenix, you could make that movie a swan song for this era, right, of the X-Men, if you really wanted to. New Mutants was very much meant to be a kickoff of a new franchise, right?
Right.
And which now is most likely never going to advance beyond the one movie, if we do get it. So that's an even tougher sell. I mean, it was probably going to be a tough sell to begin with because of the horror vibe that they were going for. But now it's a lame duck origin story, which that just is a poor formula for success.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate because, you know, a lot of the actors that are, you know, in New Mutants, I'm big fans of. But yeah, I mean, tonality perspective, say tone one more time. I just don't think it's gonna work. But I'm actually a big fan of Legion.
I am too, although I wasn't in love with the second season, to be honest with you.
So I haven't finished it. I've been kind of working through it. It is really out of this world.
It got a little too far out there for
Holy
me.
Cow, yeah. Like dance-offs and all
Very
that.
Very self-indulgent, too.
Yeah. I've never taken acid before, but assume this is what it's like. But yeah, I don't know. I just had this feeling. I can't shake it. That these are poor attempts at revitalizing a franchise that I think is slowly peaking downward and is beginning its like spiraling. And I say that with the utmost respect, though, because I think it had quite a run, like without a doubt had an amazing run. And after it kind of did its first, you know, descent, it peaked quite successfully, right? With First Class and in my, you know, in my opinion, Days of Future Past, I thought that was a fantastic movie. But, you know, you have Apocalypse. I remember seeing a whole bunch of stuff that was floating around before that movie, like when it was in production and it was, you know, about to hit, people went crazy. They were like rabid for just trashing the crap out of that film. And then, you know, you get it and you're like, ugh, actually everyone was kind of right about it. So I don't know. And then, you know, literally there's been no buzz, no word, no trailer, no nothing on Phoenix. So, right. So, you know, it's just not really doing anything to restore any hope or buzz or optimism or anything like that for the future of the franchise.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Let's since we already started touching on it,
Shall we go into the past?
Let's go all the way back to the beginning.
All right.
To Kitty. 2000.
Kitty, put your hands on my ears. Let's go.
In a time when before superheroes ruled the cinematic world, we got really what I think is just the beginning of the modern superhero age in film. with X-Men, which was a movie that came out and it did pretty well at the box office and it did pretty well critically. Although personally, I like the first X-Men movie. It didn't kind of set my world on fire, but it did set the tone for what was going to come. And it also introduced Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, which, depending on who you ask, was either like the best thing to happen to that franchise or something that some people just never got over because they felt that he was too tall, or they felt that he just was, they felt that there was too much Wolverine and he was the focus and that's not how it's supposed to be. So if you're a purist, that kind of ruffled some feathers. But I mean, I think, you know, all of that aside, I mean, I think it's hard to deny that that character and that casting decision, continuity and faithfulness aside, was a home run for Fox.
Yeah, so it's funny because before, and not to derail us because I know we're talking about X-Men, but before Bryan Singer's X-Men rolled out, there was that cartoon, that animated series.
Yes,
X-Men, the Uncanny X-Men, right? Was that it?
I think it was just called X-Men.
X-Men. That show actually felt like very, I mean, every character had their love, but Wolverine was kind of like the fan favorite, I would say. So just to give you guys a little bit of background about where I come from on the X-Men side of things is that when I was a kid and I was growing up, right? So, you know, we've talked about Spider-Man, we've talked about DC, we've talked about Superman, Batman, all that good stuff, right? But my sort of like preteen, my first like preteen, I'd say maybe like 10, 9, 10-ish, exposure to comic book collecting, my dad went out and got me two X-Men classic comic books. And it was like these weird comic books about the X-Men facing the Brood. And I, off the bat, fell in love with Wolverine. Like, off the bat. Thought he was amazing. This is, you know, this is a brown and black suit Wolverine. And I went on a rampage of like trying to collect as many Wolverine comic books as I could, you know, even going back before I was born, going back and trying to get as many of those comic books as I could get my hands on. So for me, watching X-Men was like perfect because that's the character we should be focusing on. No one likes Cyclops. He's like, yeah, he's the leader, but he's such a pussy. So it's like, whatever. Sorry. you know, my biggest thing was like when I was watching X-Men, I'm like, they better make that little love story. They better build that triangle up real nice between Wolverine, Jean Grey, and Cyclops. And they did.
They did.
So it was really cool. Patrick Stewart was perfect. Perfectly cast as Professor X.
Yep.
You know, when of course, going back to the comic book, you know, I mean, not the comic book. I'm sorry. You go back to the to that cartoon show, I mean, there were characters like Jubilee, you know. I don't even think Kitty Pryde was a big feature in that animated series, but you know, I do remember reading comic books with her, and I'm like, oh, you know, they got to bring her in, and they didn't really until later on. But you know, there was a lot of stuff I got really excited about. Colossus was like my other favorite character, and we didn't really get him until X2, but no. I'll hold that. And then there was a whole thing between Sabretooth, you know, which I thought they kind of chintzed out on in X-Men, because there's just so much history.
Well, and then that becomes messy, as we'll get into later.
Yeah, on. but the thing was, like, you know, there were, like, looking back on that movie, and I watched it recently, it's starting to not age well. Like, it's aged as well as it has.
I agree.
Years old, but, you know, as you kind of look at movies like Logan and even The Wolverine, there's just, you know, it was the late 90s, you know, it's 2000. So, you know, the aesthetic is different. But for what it was worth, you know, you mentioned Hugh Jackman and sort of his casting and people kind of flipping out. Like, yeah, I mean, continuity aside, like, he was perfect. I thought he was great.
Yeah, you know? I agree.
He captured that, like, sort of rough loner, you know, character really well. I mean, that whole scene where he's introduced and he's part of that fight club and the guy's like, don't know cheap tricks. And then he tries to kick him in the groin and you get that like metal sound. Yes. It was hilarious. And then he just proceeds to beat the crap out of him. So,
and for me, I didn't have a history with the X-Men when that movie came out. Like, I watched the animated show, but I didn't watch it religiously. I gained a greater appreciation for it like later on. But I would watch it, I didn't really read X-Men comics. I was somewhat familiar with the characters just from, you know, talking to friends and whatnot. And I didn't actually see the first X-Men in the theaters. I saw it at a friend's house. I got snowed in for an entire weekend at my friend's house. And he's like, hey, want to watch X-Men? I can't believe you haven't seen it. Because he was like a huge comic book guy. And right. I was like, all right, sure, why not? And he put it on. And I was like, yeah, you know what? This is pretty good. I'm liking this. And then I, you know, watched it a couple of more times. And by the time X2 came out, I was actually pumped for that. And I did go see that opening weekend in the theaters. And X2 was really a major turning point. Because I think X2, at the time, was considered one of the great comic book movies of all time. And I think still today, a lot of people even put it up there. I mean, there have been so many comic book movies that have come out since then. And it was a relatively small sample size back when that movie came out originally.
Right.
Even now, I think there are a lot of people that still consider that, you know, one of the, even though it's been somewhat forgotten because of the volume of movies, but people do consider that still one of the great comic book movies of all time.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, you know, it's like Spider-Man 2, right? Everyone will look at those two franchises, you know, sort of running concurrently of one another. And they always pick up the second movie, you know, X2 and Spider-Man 2 as being like the best of the franchise. I kind of agree about X2. It was definitely better than the first. I mean, the whole, you know, rounding up of mutants, and obviously we get Colossus, which is, I mean, that whole scene where they're attacking the mansion and, like, you know, Wolverine is sort of unleashed and sort of taking people down left and right. That is just a badass scene. Probably one of the better Wolverine scenes, you know, we've had to date. But again, I mean, I think it's slipping with age that, you know, if I were to say, okay, you know, X-Men 2 versus Black Panther, like Black Panther, like no doubt Black Panther. So it's, you know, I guess the thing is that because there are so many, you know, newer comic book movies and the genre has just kind of exploded. It's diluting the, you know, the sort of awe and strength of X2. That's nothing, not to take anything away from it, but I just think that's just the way that the world is working right now. But for me, I thought it was an amazing, you know, an amazing story. Again, this one, if anything, was more Wolverine-focused because it dealt with William Stryker and that.
Yep.
You know, William Stryker is introduced in X2 and he still continues to play a, you know, he still has a thread to the X universe, although this is where the continuity stuff starts to get a little crazy. So we'll get to that a little later. But, you know, I thought it was interesting. You know, Professor X gets kidnapped by William Stryker and is being used to essentially murder all of the mutants through Cerebro. And so it makes for interesting stuff. And then you kind of get the backstory behind Wolverine. His hair looks a lot better than it did in the first movie.
Yes,
it looks more comic book-esque.
Yeah.
You know, there are a couple of cut corners, like with Lady Deathstrike, the woman with the finger. I mean, they don't even call her that.
No.
But that is who she is. There is no Sabretooth, which was disappointing. And then we start to get the slightest glimpse of the Dark Phoenix.
Yeah, they begin the
teasing.
It's basically a tease, but you could tell at least the intention at the time was that they were going to go, you know, full on and tell that. The way the movie ends, basically, it's like, okay, this is going to be the Dark Phoenix now. They're going to tell the Dark Phoenix. I'll never forget seeing it in theaters. A couple of things that blew me away were all the Nightcrawler stuff.
Which
was just awesome. I mean, that opening
that
sequence alone is just fantastic.
played brilliantly by Alan Cumming.
Absolutely. And, you know, the badass Wolverine, as you mentioned earlier. And the very end, where my friend who I was watching him with at the time turned to me and he goes, "Oh my God, they're going to do the Dark Phoenix."
Yeah.
And that was like, we left the theater so excited about that. And unfortunately, we still are waiting for a great Dark Phoenix story to be told on film. Although they did tell it really well in the animated series. So if you want to watch that, you can.
Yeah.
But they didn't really follow it up. What they did follow it up with was X-Men The Last Stand. X-Men The Last Stand, Bryan Singer leaves the franchise at this point because he was going to follow his dream and make a Superman movie, which wound up being Superman Returns, which we spoke about at length in the Superman episode. Which
you forgot to say, a subpar Superman movie.
Well, the one that made Aaron want to kick 5-year-olds.
That's right. So he invested all of his time. He, you know, left his first family to focus on building one for Superman.
Yeah, and it was his dream. I mean, the Richard Donner Superman was the reason why he got into filmmaking. So I get it. Listen, you have a chance to... They basically gave him free rein and said, here, make a Superman movie, and you can make it a tribute or a continuation of the Donner stuff. And that's what he did. But there was still an X-Men movie to be made, and that was going to be the third X-Men following up the very successful X2. And originally, Matthew Vaughn was hired to be the director of X-Men 3, and he will play a role eventually in the series, but he did not actually become the director. He left because, there's different stories that went around. One of them was that they were pushing, they wanted him to get it made. He couldn't work within their schedule. There were a lot of reasons.
Really, really tight.
Yeah, like, why?
I remember following the production of that, and it almost did not happen, this movie. Which, in retrospect, you kind of wish it didn't, because it was just kind of thrown together so fast.
Yep.
And I remember people commenting, Patrick Stewart's finally on board. Oh, and he's, I'm going to reach out to Ian McKellen, and we're going to get, Ian's going to, he's going to get signed back up. And then all of a sudden this thing got like thrown together super, super fast, with everybody on board, and it shows.
It does.
It really does.
Brett Ratner, he of the Rush Hour film series, and also, Red Dragon, and a couple other movies, he takes over as the director, and basically his role was to just get the film done. Like, he it was like, just finish it, let's get it out there. And what he delivers is X-Men The Last Stand, which is just an absolute mess of a film. It tries to tell the Dark Phoenix story, and also get the Sentinels involved, and Bolivar Trask, and there's a lot going on, and there's a whole lot of nothing, and it looked like they were also trying to really make it truly The Last Stand, and maybe be an end to at least a number of the characters, because they were their goal was to start making some solo films at that point. And it's just, X-Men The Last Stand is a bad movie. It is really, it's one of those movies that now has become sort of an example that people use when they want to refer to like bad comic book movies.
Right.
And if you think about it, the X-Men franchise to this point followed, not exactly this, creatively anyway, followed a similar trajectory to the Spider-Man franchise. Not box office wise, but, whereas the first movie was good. Although I think more people liked the first Spider-Man a little bit more than the first X-Men. But then the second movie then kind of becomes this darling, right? And then the third movie just is an absolute mess. Behind the scenes, on the screen, everything about it is a complete failure. Although the movie made a ton of money, which is ironic. Yeah. Like Spider-Man 3, which was a very successful movie financially. So go figure.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, because I think the movie certainly had a lot of potential. I was just like kind of scrolling through to see who wrote who wrote the script, and it seems like it was like a hodgepodge of different folks that were kind of weighing in and out of the story. So is it really Ratner's fault completely that the movie was a complete and utter mess? Not necessarily.
Yeah, he did what he was tasked to do, which is complete a film.
He came in, they gave him a tight deadline, he pulled it off.
Yep.
I mean, let's be honest, he pulled the damn thing off. It was just the way it left, you know, the characters at the end, with essentially, you know, Wolverine having to kill Jean Grey, who was out of control. They did some really wonky, and you know what's kind of funny? Okay, before I say that, I mean, they did some wonky, like, de-aging of Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen?
Yeah.
McKellen during X3, which has seen a tremendous evolution in terms of like the de-aging of characters now, which is phenomenal. So kudos to Brett Ratner for wanting to take that approach and for delivering some very weird rubbery faces, but hey, look at where we are today. So maybe he's the godfather of the de-aging process for CGI.
Right. That was actually, yeah, that was like kind of a big deal at the time.
It really was. It was a little weird, but you know, again, yeah. Dayton turns his head to the side. It's like, dude, your cheek is still exactly where it was before you turn your head to the left.
Listen, pioneers, you know, someone's got to be the first one, right?
Yeah, yeah. Which, again, in terms of continuity, as we get to the next, well, when we get to the next X-Men film, makes no sense. But, you know, that movie essentially killed the franchise, right?
Well, like, it kind of did.
X-Men yes. franchise. And then it went into this really weird dormant period where Fox decided to say, you know what? We're going to focus on origin stories.
We are. We're going to have X-Men Origins Wolverine and X-Men Origins Magneto. Now, right. X-Men Origins Magneto, we never got. But we did get X-Men Origins Wolverine, unfortunately. And while that also was a box office success, that is, I don't, is that a bigger mess than X-Men The Last Stand? It might be.
You're damn right.
It is a disaster. Like, I could watch X-Men The Last Stand if I needed to and not want to, like, throw things at my television. I don't think I could get through X-Men Origins Wolverine ever again.
It is so bad.
Yeah.
It is egregiously bad.
Yes.
Like, it's actually offensive.
Because you can't even take a breath, you want to maybe step back. Yeah, you're gonna have to. Yeah,
I'm like, okay, let me drink some water for this because I'm about to go into a rant. Like, what pissed me off so much about that movie was actually Hugh Jackman's enthusiasm for that movie. Like, dude, are you not reading your script? I remember that. At this point, I think I was following superherohype.com. I was probably following Latino Review, that review, Inacool. And I remember the whole, like, conversation around reshoots for this movie, right? And saying, oh, like, there are going to be chunks of this movie that are going to be reshot. And then at that point was the first time I had recognized that reshoots may not necessarily mean, like, a good thing. Like, these aren't necessarily pickups. I'm sure they were, but like I remember the negative connotation to X-Men, to Wolverine Origins, their reshoots being like a sort of negative thing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we get our first taste of Deadpool, which oddly enough is still played by the same character, Ryan Reynolds, but it was just like a total. Who was smoking what? Like,
yeah, that was a. You can't fail worse than they failed with Deadpool in that movie.
That is just crazy. The CGI in that movie is the worst I've ever seen.
It's brutal. Yeah,
I mean, it. You know, Tron should have been nominated for an Academy Award in 2013 for their CGI based on versus what we got in X-Men Origins Wolverine. Like the scene where he first unveils his claws when he's in the bathroom and he's literally like cutting up the bathroom and like taking out the sink, you can totally tell that these things are like, I can't even describe what they look like because they just look like, it looked like a 5-year-old colored some, like, you know, steak knives.
Yeah,
on the screen.
It's a terrible movie. It's literally, it's just a, it's a terrible, it's poorly made. It's poorly written. And I know this is, again, the continuity thing for you, but something we talked about when we were talking about the Batman franchise. Like, again, you know how when we were talking about how Batman Forever and Batman and Robin were supposed to be, in theory, part of the same, like, that was supposed to be the same universe, right? The same Batman, the same everything, right? But they decided to just do whatever they felt like with characters that in some cases were already established, like Harvey Dent. Well, I mean, here you have the Sabretooth debacle, where they had already introduced Sabretooth, and now they reintroduced Sabretooth, although this is a prequel, so it was now a completely different person, a completely different looking person.
Right.
It was Liev Schreiber was Sabretooth, and while, listen, I'm a fan, and that is on paper an upgrade, but it just didn't make any sense, and it wound up not working anyway in the context of the movie, so...
They do a little bit of that with the continuity thing. Like, they're just like, oh, we're gonna introduce this character that you've already met in like previous movies, and oh yeah, by the way, he's like a little person and he's white when the first one was black. I'm talking about Bolivar Trask.
But the thing about
X-Men Origins is that it was directed by Gavin Hood, right? Who's coming off of, I think he had won an Oscar maybe a year or two before he decided to direct X-Men Origins Wolverine. So you're like, oh man, they're going to bring in, you know, this really cool director. I think it was like Darren Aronofsky was rumored to.
Oh, that's
to
right.
To do Wolverine.
About that, Darren Aronofsky, the man who has been rumored to make more comic book films,
seriously,
but yet to make one.
Yeah. Yeah, so he was rumored to do it, and then that didn't happen, and then, but they essentially erased that movie off, like, you know, in terms of continuity, they pretty much undid it.
They sure did.
Later, so but before we get to that movie, what would have been the X-Men Origins Magneto movie turned into X-Men First Class.
Yes, it did. And X-Men First Class, which is now directed by Matthew Vaughn, the one-time director of X-Men The Last Stand, he finally does get to make an X-Men movie. And I went into X-Men The Last Stand. I didn't see it. Like, I saw it after it had already been out like 3 or 4 weeks. And I had very low expectations. And I loved the crap out of X-Men, X-Men First Class. Like, I couldn't tell enough people how much I enjoyed that movie. Yeah. And, you know, maybe it was the low expectations. Maybe it was the fact that, you know, I loved that cast. Jennifer Lawrence, you know, who I didn't really know at that point.
Yeah.
You know, James McAvoy, obviously. Michael Fassbender. I mean, there's a lot of great stuff in that movie.
Yeah, they do some really, really interesting stuff with First Class. I mean, it picks up. If anyone remembers, obviously, if you're listening to this and you're like, I definitely remember everything related to X-Men, but it picks up right after they knock out Eric Lyncher when he's reaching for his family and first, you know, exhibits his mutant powers. They kind of pick up right after that scene that was first shown in the first sort of 10 minutes of X-Men. They pick up right after that, and they kind of show us the same scene, and then what happens to him? What turns, you know, Eric bad? You know, what are his influences? And it is so gut wrenching.
Yes, it is.
And raw, and played better than nobody. You know what I mean? Like, Michael Fassbender just does an amazing job, knocks it out of the park. You really get to you really get a good sense too of McAvoy's, like, sympathy and like all of the human characteristics of, and I say human, but like, you know, the real characteristics of Xavier and sort of how these two became best friends. And then ultimately their ideals is what split them apart. So, I mean, it was really fascinating stuff. I kind of barked at the idea that, Mystique and Xavier had such a tight relationship.
Right.
But then I remember I went back because this is where my craziness for continuity started to kick in. I'm like, okay, if these are the same characters, I'm like, does Xavier ever interact with Mystique in the other X-Men movies? And I'm like, no. And then she's the one that ends up in X2, she's the one that ends up disabling Cerebro.
Right.
And I'm like, and then it's like, oh, it kind of makes sense. Yeah. So she would know because she helped him build it. Best cameo ever in that movie with Wolverine.
Yes, it is.
Popping up. But if, you know, if I'm being like blatantly honest here, I think the thing that stole the show for me in First Class was Fassbender.
I agree. Sure. He's absolutely amazing. There is
that scene where he tracks down those two Nazis in Argentina. Yes.
Yeah.
And that scene, I was like, this is like, holy, this is an X-Men movie. Like, the dude just impaled some dude's hand and then took the knife out, stabbed him again, and then shot him. Like, point blank. Yeah. Cold-blooded killer.
That awesome whole scene. Sequence where he's just hunting people down.
Yeah.
Is fantastic. And, you know, it's also great that the relationship, or the chemistry between McAvoy and Fassbender in that movie is so good that you're actually, well, I was anyway, actually disappointed at, you know, when I'm watching it, because I'm going, oh man, it's going to suck that like they have to become enemies because right. They're so good together. Like when they're on the hunt for all the mutants, yeah. Like that stuff is great. And you know,
they're recruiting.
Yeah. And they're recruiting, and McAvoy and Fassbender's Magneto in this movie is sort of like an anti-hero.
Yeah,
and I guess they always kind of played that up to the point where like they never, I don't think, wanted him to ever be a true villain because of the, you know, the they basically had like a political element to so depending on which way you swung, like morally, like looking at the issue that they were fighting against, like you could look at one sort of, I mean, yeah, one was technically a villain versus the good guy, but Magneto was always fighting for what he believed in.
Yeah.
And there was something to that. So that was one of the other things that grabbed me. And also, you know, while McAvoy is brilliant, and I loved his performance, but Fassbender to me also, similar to Ewan McGregor in the Star Wars prequels, I totally believed that Michael Fassbender was going to become the Magneto that I had seen in the original or the prior trilogy.
Yeah, he did a great job at connecting the dots and sort of carrying that pain with him, right? And like we were saying before, it goes down to his ideals. They're both looking to preserve the mutant kind, right? But they just have very different approaches to how they're doing that.
Yeah.
Xavier is all about looking for peace and sort of coordination and collaboration between, you know, normal human beings, and you know, Eric is looking at dominance and protecting them in a way that's like, no, we have to be first.
Yeah, he's militant. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, they did a great job at setting all of that up and sort of, you know, it's interesting because the way that they play him in the first movie, when they allude that, he's Jewish and had lived through the Holocaust. Yep. I mean, these are elements that, you know, as a comic book reader, I don't ever remember coming across, but it was an interesting wrinkle or foil that they added to that character, because he is coming at it from a place of, I've seen what the sort of top of the food chain has done to the lower food chain, and I will never let that happen to me again. That's some powerful stuff.
It sure is. They've also used, you know, that metaphor of like being persecuted because of what you are was a very big theme throughout a lot of these X-Men movies.
Yeah.
And that ties in right there. I mean, obviously it makes sense to take it to like a real level. You're going to use the Holocaust as a way to show, I mean, that's people being persecuted because of what they are.
Yeah.
So they added some weight, and because of his backstory, it made sense that he would be militant and,
mm-hmm.
the way he was, as opposed to, you know, Charles Xavier, and why they would have opposing views on that. And, you know, it does lead to tragedy. Obviously, that rift and that difference of how they wanted to go about things is what ultimately leads to Charles Xavier being paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to see that at the end of First Class, and you get to see the divide where now, yep. you know, the battle lines are drawn and now you have the sides. And while they're not technically enemies at that point, right, but clearly sides have been chosen. And there's the right. Magneto side and there's the Charles Xavier side. And you obviously know what both sides are going to be about going mm-hmm. forward.
Yeah, and then with this movie, you know, this is the return of Bryan Singer to the franchise.
As after, a producer, of course, yep.
again, abandoning us for a subpar Superman movie. And he delivers, in my opinion. You know, he does a great job at marrying the, you know, the older cast with... and when I say older cast, I mean the original X-Men cast of, you know, Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen.
Yep.
McKellen does a great job of marrying those, you know, those characters with their younger counterparts, you know, played by James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender, respectively, and using sort of Wolverine as the thread between those timelines.
So X-Men Days of Future Past winds up becoming sort of, from a director standpoint, the reverse of X-Men The Last Stand, minus Brett Ratner, because Matthew Vaughn leaves the franchise again due to personal reasons. And I think one of the reasons was also, again, they felt like he was being pressured to make the movie too quickly.
Right.
So he leaves, and Bryan Singer, who had been a producer on First Class, slides in as director. Mm-hmm. Replacing Matthew Vaughn, and he directs X-Men Days of Future Past, which is a high watermark for this franchise. This movie, you know, and again, people have issues with, you know, the way too much Wolverine, and he wasn't supposed to be involved, and that wasn't his role, and the kind of, we get all of that. But look, at this point, if you haven't come to grips with the fact that Wolverine is the star of this show, you know, you haven't been paying attention. Mm-hmm. So he's the star of the show. The movie, you know, uses him, like you said, to kind of be the bridge between the original timeline, for lack of a better term, and this new timeline that was created, or this younger versions, whatever that was supposed to be. And I, you know, Days of Future Past is great. And it also gives us a chance to redo the Sentinels and Bolivar Trask, which they sure did redo him.
Oh, yeah.
Any more opposite. Of Bill Duke, right, Bolivar Trask in X-Men Predator. The Last Stand. And now you have Peter Dinklage playing Bolivar Trask in Days of Future Past. And
so weird.
It is. And that's, again, one of those continuity things that there's no way to explain it away. It's like you just have to accept it. I saw someone made a real good effort one time trying to say that, and I didn't even realize this at the time, but I guess in X-Men The Last Stand, he's only called Trask, like, and it's really like you almost have to watch the credits to even realize that that's who that's supposed to be. Like, they don't make a big deal over the who that character is supposed to be. So that technically that was some other Trask, or that was, you know, they were trying their best to say,
It was Trask with a CK, not an SK.
Yeah. But either way, it's tough to explain, and it really doesn't matter, because by the end of this movie, X-Men The Last Stand doesn't matter at all, so who cares?
Yeah, they just clean the slate. I mean, basically, Days of Future Past is effectively the eraser for the dry markers. It's to come over and just like, I'm just going to wipe this timeline here. Oh, yeah, X-Men Origins? No, this isn't how Wolverine becomes Wolverine anymore. Right. Like, we're just going to...
We're going to get rid of what we didn't like, and we're going to keep what we did and move on.
Yeah. So then, you know, again, not played by the same actors at all. So you've got Danny Boyle, Danny Boyle, I think his name is the actor. What is his name? The guy that played Stryker in Origins. Anyways, doesn't matter. Different actor in Origins. And then we're going to get some younger dude who's like literally 20 years his junior to play Trask. Or not Trask, sorry, Stryker. And then he essentially grabs Wolverine.
Danny Houston in X-Men Origins Wolverine.
I got the Danny right.
Yes.
Got the Danny right. Yeah, so that's, you know, that's one continuity thing. But I kind of overlooked all of that because I'm like, you know, that wasn't a really a good movie. We don't need to focus on all the bad stuff in the, you know, all these semantics, these continuity semantics related to bad movies. Let's just keep on moving on. And ultimately, you know, I think Days of Future Past was well done. It was, again, cleaning the slate, you know, sort of resetting the franchise and allowing them to kind of do new things. It allowed them to also introduce their characters at a younger age, their lead characters, their lead comic book characters, I should say, like Jean Grey, Cyclops, and all of them. And we get that take because it's teased at the end of Days of Future Past as a stringer, a trailer stringer, like Apocalypse, right?
Yes.
And off the bat, as I've mentioned, this movie, for some reason, I think people just had this taste in their mouth that it was going to be caca. You know, you get your first image of Apocalypse, played by Oscar Isaac, who's a phenomenal actor, and the comments start rolling out. He looks like Ivan Ooze from the Power Rangers movie, and boy, were they right.
Yeah, Apocalypse is just a bad movie. There's very little redeeming about it. And, you know, I realized that we kind of skipped over The Wolverine.
Oh, man.
Which actually, yes, we did. I think that came out before Days of Future Past, didn't it?
It was actually the lead into Days of Future Past.
Right, because so that's what kind of brought, because other than that fun cameo, Wolverine has no role in First Class. But right. In The Wolverine, where James Mangold enters the X-Men universe for the first time, that is technically a sequel to X-Men The Last Stand. And there are references to that. So I guess in theory, Days of Future Past also kind of sort of wipes that movie, some of the things anyway about that movie.
Yeah, technically. Yeah. Because, well, no, not necessarily because what, well, yes. So essentially,
I can see there's the hives coming out now. Here we go. He tries to wrap his head around this continuity.
Here we go. Okay. At the end of Wolverine's in the airport. Everyone stops. We get that freeze time thing. Professor X miraculously comes back when his body has been completely destroyed in Last Stand. And for those of you, I mean, literally his. I mean, no one did Ash better than Brett Ratner again in Last Stand. I mean, we got Ash in Avengers Infinity War, but he did it in Last Stand with Professor X turning into Ash after Jean Grey was off the chain crazy.
That Brett Ratner was a revolutionary
this guy.
Huh?
Yeah. Although it is alluded that he jumped into some like catatonic dude's body at the end of that movie. But anyways. So Professor X comes back, and he's coming along with Magneto.
Yep.
And they look at Wolverine, they look at Logan, they say, Logan, we need your help to save the world. And that's kind of like how that movie ends.
Yes.
And then we pick up in the future sometime. So God knows how long all of this stuff has happened, you know, like And there are people that have broken down the timeline, like, you know, when the Wolverine takes place and when does Days of Future Past. I think it's like a couple of years, obviously, because Wolverine has got gray hair.
Sure.
And everyone's in their little futuristic leather outfits and capes and crap. And so, yeah, so essentially when they send him back, I guess it doesn't happen, but we don't know that it doesn't happen because we pick up back in the future, just in a different future, not with mutants on the run, but mutants kind of continuing their everyday lives and everyone's kind of reinstated at the end of Days of Future Past. So we pick up. So after Wolverine, everyone's dead. All the X-Men are gone for the most part, with the exception of a few. We start Days of Future Past. At the end of Days of Future Past, everything's been sort of revamped and reinstated. Wolverine's origins have been sort of revamped and changed, and everyone's still alive.
Right.
And then we decide to go back into the past and focus on the sort of younger class of X-Men in Apocalypse.
Right, because now here's the chance for them to start to reintroduce the rest of the characters, basically.
Right.
And unfortunately, X-Men Apocalypse is a movie that only this Disney Fox sale could probably retcon.
Yeah.
Because it's just not a good movie. I literally have seen it once.
So have I.
And that's enough for me. And I don't have a lot of detailed thoughts on it other than the fact that I just did not like this movie. Mm. It wasn't fun. It wasn't cool. There really wasn't much redeeming about it for me. So I left it at that.
They do another take on Wolverine's origins again.
Yeah.
They just couldn't leave it alone. And the thing is, the version that they do end up with in Apocalypse is almost like exactly the way he looks in the comic books, with this like weird headpiece, mm-hmm. visor and whatever. And essentially Jean Grey and Cyclops are the ones that release him into the wild. So there's that, which is very weird. so at some point, he goes through everything he does and he rediscovers himself, and he already has the adamantium at this point, and so the future of Wolverine after, so this is where it gets crazy. Ultimately, before I even like flip the hell out here, because I can feel it coming.
It's like the Phoenix. Phoenix is building inside of you.
Dude, I'm turning green. The gamma radiation is pulsing through my body. I'm about to Hulk out and flip my mic over. The thing that pisses me off more than anything about Apocalypse is that it had no stakes, right? Because I've argued this like till I was green in the face, that essentially because we see the future in Days of Future Past, right? Like Wolverine still has the gray hair. Everyone's old. They're all back in the mansion. Everybody's good. Everyone is there. Everybody's alive. Apocalypse happens before that moment in time, which means nothing in Apocalypse matters because everybody's okay. Everybody is fine. They obviously get past Apocalypse. There's no stakes.
Yeah. If you're going to end Days of Future Past the way they ended it, right?
In the future,
then you...
Nothing you really don't need to matter.
Yeah, you don't need to go back. Like you basically either need to go forward and make another movie with that like original cast, who are like the last people that we see basically in Days of Future Past. You either need to leave it alone, or just go back to the drawing board and kind of start from scratch. Right. And they chose none of those options. I mean, they went back into the past, and that was the worst probably of the options. And just said, it doesn't matter, I guess, at this point anyway. But it did matter. I mean, there's only so much you could take. And the stakes are probably the least of the issues with that movie. Yeah. But it is another one of those things where you're like, okay, not only is this just kind of a bad movie, but now, like, yeah, the stakes high anyway. Yeah, it's pointless.
Yeah, it's totally pointless. I mean, I think, they went far enough with Magneto and the start of the X-Men, the first, hence First Class, I thought that was done well because we never touch any of that stuff. But to kind of set this up as like, oh, there's this major villain that pops up and blah, blah, blah. And apparently, they face them and all this, and they've already spoiled it for everybody.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the problems I have with just to bring up another one of our episodes, but the Obi-Wan Kenobi thing. It's like there's nothing. Nothing's going to change anything. Like the story is going to be fine. It'll be a self-contained story, and that's good. I mean, that's all well and good. It's got to be a very, very good story, but it ultimately isn't going to move the needle in terms of where that character. Like, it's not going to add anything we don't know about the character.
Yeah, so I mean,
that's what it does. That's what it did to the X-Men.
Days of Future Past, in theory, probably should have been like the last of the movies. They probably could have done Apocalypse or whatever, after First Class and then done Days of Future Past. But I think they were riding high. They were riding the momentum of the positive vibes that they got from First Class, which wasn't a huge box office success, but it was a critical success. And I think it gained them a lot of goodwill. And then the Wolverine also, did pretty well but did well with the critics, and it got mm-hmm. more goodwill, and they're like, let's just do Days of Future Past and let's just undo a lot of that other stuff. Yeah. They were kind of fixated on that and not really thinking too much about what the next step would be. And then they just went in the wrong direction. Now, thankfully, Apocalypse was not the last of the movies.
Nope.
Because we got... Now, we're not going to really... I know that the Deadpool stuff is... And I know I don't want to... I know you're already walking on eggshells right now, but I don't want to get you too much with the continuity, because I know how you feel about the Deadpool continuity, but we're not going to get too much into the Deadpool stuff, even though we know it's part of this kind of universe.
Loosely part.
But what we are going to talk about is what is, as of now, the final movie that
and
we've
the
gotten.
Very, very best.
Which is Logan, which transcends the superhero genre, transcends the X-Men. Logan is just flat out a great movie. You could have replaced, you know, this could have been a Western. Mm-hmm. This could have been, you know, Hugh Jackman playing just somebody else, and it still would have been a great movie.
Yeah.
I mean, Logan.
That's kind of like True Grit.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even. I was ugly crying at the end of Logan. Yeah. My range of emotions in that movie was, I mean, that is a masterwork.
Yeah.
And if you get a chance to watch the black and white version, that thing is like, oh my God, I can't watch either one of those versions enough. I've seen them over and over again. I love it just as much every time, if not more. I mean, the X-23 character, the relationship between him and Charles Xavier. I mean, it basically everything that they got wrong, like in Apocalypse and in the worst of this franchise, they get right with this movie. And if you only see one X-Men movie or X-Men related movie ever, it has to be Logan. You don't need to see the stuff that came before it. It helps. It adds a little bit. But, I mean, they give you enough. That movie, man. Oh, my God.
It is a freaking masterpiece. It is... You know, probably one of the best written comic book movies to date. It brilliantly acted on all levels. Yeah. On all levels. From X-23 to Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart, who's actually a heartbreaking character,
oh my God.
Professor X.
That's such a brilliant
to see all of that. See Caliban by what's his name? Peter Merchant.
Stephen Merchant. Yeah.
Stephen Merchant. Brilliant act. I mean, just top notch across the board, and a perfect swan song for a beloved character.
Yep. Perfect ending. Perfect. Yeah. I mean, just everything about that movie is note perfect.
Yeah, it is so good. I mean, if anyone who's listening has not seen it, you know, top recommendation is to go out, buy the movie. Don't even rent it. Buy that movie because you will not be disappointed. It is everything that you want from a Wolverine movie. It is everything you want from an X-Men movie. It is everything you want and then some that you want from a comic book movie. It's just... It isn't really a comic book movie.
No, it's not. I mean, it obviously it is just inherently, but it's like I said, it transcends all of that. And I mean, if you look at the three Wolverine movies together, you start with X-Men Origins Wolverine, which is like, it's so bad I don't have words for it. And you end with Logan, which is so great I don't have words for it. And then the Wolverine is in the middle, and that's, you know, good. But, yeah, it's a kind of a fascinating way. Look at, like, the way they've handled that character through the years. It's like, how can you have such high highs and such low lows? It's almost unfathomable, but, man.
But they finally got it right.
They sure did,
And the reason why X-Men Wolverine, I mean, Wolverine, the Wolverine is so good is because of ninjas.
Of course.
No, but anyways. Logan is just,
yeah,
it's good.
Yes,
it's good.
It is. That's a special film. And that is always going to be, I can't imagine that there are going to be very many movies that are going to knock, you know, kind of like The Dark Knight, that are going to knock Logan or like The Dark Knight out of my top five anytime soon, probably. Just because I look at both of those movies, actually, as movies that completely transcended the genre that you would naturally lump them into.
Yeah, yeah. And they're tough acts to follow.
They are, and maybe who knows if they are going to be followed at this point. But so that basically wraps up the X-Men universe. Aside from the Deadpool stuff, which we spoke about Deadpool 2 already.
Yeah,
you know, it's fun, and we know what that's all about. But who knows what the future of that's going to be now?
Yeah, no, I'm super interested to, you know, obviously, I think, you know, there's obviously a perception that, you know, Disney is a family brand, right? And why would they want to hurt that by purchasing Fox and then sort of, you know, absorbing it into their DNA, which I probably think they won't necessarily do. I think they might keep, you know, Fox to some degree its own separate entity so that it can still do the things it needs to do.
Yeah.
But don't get it twisted. I mean, Buena Vista Studios has done some hard films, sure. You know, and let's also not forget that Disney does own Marvel TV as well. And if you've seen The Punisher or Daredevil, that is some hard stuff.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of arms. People hear Disney and right away, obviously you think of the cartoons and Pixar.
They think of Winnie the
family.
Pooh.
Yeah. But it's not, I mean, Disney is a massive, massive operation, both in television and film. So is there room for them to create a separate brand or keep a brand separate that would be, you know, maybe a little bit more edgy or, yeah, of course there is. Will they do it? You know, maybe they will, maybe they won't. Maybe they're going to pick and choose some of their properties that they want to fold into the MCU proper, and then right. They'll keep some properties maybe that they want to focus on for television, and then others that they're going to keep maybe in a separate film brand that's, a little grittier, a little edgier.
Right.
Those fun buzzwords.
This is a studio that kills parents off in almost every animated film.
That's a whole different, that's a whole different conversation.
You know, this is the studio that scars children for life.
Yeah.
And it hires artists to put, you know, phallic symbols in their art cover.
Disney can be a little naughty. Yeah. But, you know, there's a difference, I think, between things like that and overtly making a Deadpool movie, for instance. But who knows what's going to happen with that merger and with the franchise. I don't know, maybe they're just going to want to start from scratch anyway. And, yeah. And you know, who knows? I mean, I guess we're never going to get that X-Force movie, which kind of sucks.
Knows?
But who knows?
You know,
you never know.
I mean, that'd be a really interesting take for Disney to kind of instill that good faith with fans by continuing on with Deadpool and the X-Force movie that is, you know, currently slated, to say, hey, yeah, we still plan on letting Ryan Reynolds and team and all those folks do their thing.
Yeah. I mean, there was a time where we never thought we were going to see Spider-Man in the MCU. We never were going to see the X-Men in the MCU or any of that stuff. And obviously those days are here now where we are seeing them as potentially or already in the MCU. So, I mean, I guess anything can happen. And Disney is not one to shy away from making money, so.
No, absolutely not. I mean, think about, you know, the way that they're currently running their studios, like Lucasfilm. I mean, that's Kathleen Kennedy's ship. Marvel is very much Kevin Feige's ship. So, you know. Hopefully they will do the same with Fox.
Yeah, and of course there's always that streaming service, which who knows what's going to happen with that. So with that streaming service, I mean, again, they're game changers. You don't know what they're going to. There's obviously going to be an expansion of many universes via that streaming service, and you know who knows where that's going to head.
Yeah, I assume. They just announced D23. Well, they announced it it's in August of 2019. So next year, I assume we're going to get some really, really big stuff next summer about the streaming service, about the future of Marvel, Lucasfilm, all that good stuff, probably Fox. So next year can't come soon enough.
Well, yeah, I think we say that almost every year, but yeah.
I know. So much fandom stuff to chew on.
Oh, boy. It's almost like be a good time to start a podcast or something.
Yeah, that's a good idea, man. Yeah.
Well, it's definitely a good time to end this podcast. So we did the plug for the contest at the beginning of the show, just to reiterate. If you'd like to enter our contest to win digital copies of Black Panther and Star Wars The Last Jedi, just go to our website, thefanboygarage.com, scroll down to contact the show, send us an email with the subject line, Fanboy Garage Contest 1. And again, if you've given us a 5-star review on iTunes, leave us the username that you use to leave that review. And if you've purchased something from the merch store already, leave us some proof of, you know, that purchase, and we'll give you some extra entries into the contest. We're going to pick one winner at random, and you will we will announce that winner on the next episode of the show. So good luck to everybody.
Yeah, and who knows, if you decide to leave a comment with your 5-star review, maybe we'll read it on the show, on the next show.
That too. For now, of course, you can find me on Twitter, at RealCAlmighty.
And you can find me on Twitter at Starting Sith. There have been lots of lively conversations, so please, let's continue those. And guys, if you have any questions, any topics, anything that you guys want us to cover, discuss, we have no problem taking those on, or even putting a pause on, you know, some of the topics that we currently have planned. So please get at us.
Yes, and you can get at us at The Fanboy Garage on Twitter. And of course, once again, the website is thefanboygarage.com, where you can get the newest episode, the episode archive, and the merchandise store, along with our Amazon associate link. And of course, you can contact us via the website as well, for those of you that are not on Twitter. So we hope to hear from people that way as well. And thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Good night. Do-do-do-do-do-do. Do-do-do-do-do-do.